हरितुष्यति शरीरा आत्मा मानस एव वा नारद
असरा. Narada inquired, "Are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization?" Purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This was a hint by Narada to Vyasadeva regarding the cause of his despondency. Vyasadeva, as the descendant of Parashara, a greatly powerful sage, had the privilege of having a great parentage, which should not have given Vyasadeva cause for despondency. Being a great son of a great father, he should not have identified the self with the body or the mind. Ordinary men with a poor fund of knowledge can identify the body as self or the mind as self, but Vyasadeva should not have done so. One cannot be cheerful by nature unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind. The son of Parashara, Narada inquired, "Are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization?" Narada Muni is here asking a question in which the answer is obviously understood. The cause of all distress, the reason in which we have lost connection to our eternal blissful nature, is that we are identifying with this body and this mind as being ourselves. This is the root cause of all suffering. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. When we think in terms of I being this body, and our mind, our senses, our homes, our families, our wealth, our creative abilities, when we think them to be mine, that is the root cause of the hard knot of material bondage, which forcibly casts the soul into the repetition of birth and death, and subjects that eternal blissful soul to the pangs of the threefold miseries of material existence. To identify with the body of mind is the only cause of suffering. And yet, Narada Muni is asking Srila Vedavyas, Parasharya, "Are you satisfied by identifying with the body and mind?" No one can be satisfied by identifying with the body and mind. But the illusion of Maya perpetuates a condition where we are striving to become satisfied through identification with the body and mind. It is a great perplexity. We find a little bit of satisfaction, which is actually of no substance at all for the soul. But under illusion, we think there's some little satisfaction when our mind, our senses, are in connection with a apparently pleasing object. But actually, as Krishna says in Gita, Yehi samsparashaja bhoga dhuka jonaya evate atyanta vanta konteya nate shuramate buddha. That this is the sign of less intelligence. Because the objects of the senses are the sources of all pain and suffering, because they are temporary. We become attached without real fulfillment. And even that little bit of an excuse of fulfillment, that artificial imposition on our mind or senses that the sense objects create, we become so attached because we're so hungry, we're so thirsty, longing for spiritual pleasure. We can't live without it. So we become so endlessly attached to a little mirage of pleasure that just touches our mind or senses for a few moments only. You can imagine how hungry we are for Krishna. How much longing we are for pleasure if we can experience any satisfaction at all for such a poor excuse for the real thing. Just like if a man is tremendously seeking the pleasure of a woman, or a woman is seeking too much the pleasure of a man due to uncontrolled mind and senses, sometimes just the thought of her name or a sight of her picture gives some little excuse to think, oh, some pleasure. It's not the real pleasure. But because there's such a deep attachment to the real pleasure, some little tiny excuse, which really is nothing at all, seems to give some relief. In a similar way, we are so much longing to be reunited with Krishna and find the bliss of Krishna consciousness. We're so much pleasure seekers by nature, as spirit souls, part of God, who is the reservoir of all pleasure. Even the foolish, illusory objects of pain, which apparently give a tiny idea of pleasure to the mind or senses, we become so much attached to it. We have to hold on to something. If we can't find the real thing, we'll attach ourselves to any little excuse which has any semblance of the real thing. That is Maya. Because Krishna is all attractive. And Krishna explains all beautiful and wonderful things in this world are just a spark of my splendor. So it's simply because this material world is a perverted reflection of the glory and beauty of God, just an infinitesimally tiny, small reflection, pervertedly manifested of Krishna. But even that gives us so much sense of relief and satisfaction because we're so much hungry for the real thing. But the problem is that as long as we remain attached to the infinitesimal, illusory, perverted reflections of Krishna's beauty and grace. We cannot put our consciousness on Krishna. To the degree we are attached to the perverted reflections, to that degree we cannot connect our minds and our senses and our hearts to the real source of all pleasure, Krishna. Therefore, attachment to the satisfaction of the body and mind is the cause of all bondage and illusion, and it is the only thing that's keeping us away from our true, eternal, loving relationship with God, Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Yoga means to reunite with Krishna. And as our Guru Maharaj would repeatedly tell us, there is no question of yoga without controlling the mind and the senses. It is a farce. It is a cheating business. People sometimes, they sell mantras. They teach forms of asanas or meditations. And they say you just do these practices and you can go on, you can eat what you like, you can say what you like, what you can do what you like. But this is not yoga at all. And this is the idea that people have in the age of Kali Yuga of what yoga is. When people think of yoga, the ordinary man, they think of standing on head or sitting in Padmasana or sitting in meditation. But yoga means, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, to control one's mind, to control one's senses, to restrict them from material enjoyment, and to fix them on God. True meditation is to fix one's mind on God. Yoga means the reuniting of the soul with the super soul. And ultimately, as Krishna says, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam ampapadyate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sadurlava. That reunion can only take place after many births and deaths through surrendering to Krishna. Yoginam api saravesham madgatena antaratmana shradavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamamata. Of all yogis, one who abides in me with great faith is most intimately united in yoga and is the highest of all. It is the perfection of yoga. And really speaking, unless other yoga practices culminate in pure devotional service, it is all a waste of time. It is all material. It is all for naught. The Vedic scriptures written by Vedavyas have taught so many various different principles to elevate the consciousness. But if you do not achieve through this process the culmination of Vasudeva Saravamiti, surrendering to Vasudeva Krishna, Samahatma Sadhulava, then you'll never become a Mahatma. All of your yogic practices, all of your religious performances were really just a waste of time. But material life is also a waste of time. So it's not that you've lost anything valuable. The only thing you have to lose that's of any value is Krishna consciousness. Because nothing else is of any value anywhere in all of the creation. Sunyayatam jagat saravam govinda virahe name. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, Krishna, this whole universe, bhuloka, bhuvarloka, swargaloka, maharloka, janarloka, tapaloka, satyaloka, all of the universes, all of the heavenly planets, where there are so much wonderful enjoyments, the higher planets of the rishis, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, where people have such great mystic cities and they are always absorbed in higher realms of consciousness, Brahmaloka. The whole creation, from Patala Loka to Satya Loka, it is all a dreary void bereft of the sight of Govinda. When we are in a city like Bombay, everywhere we look, Maya's propaganda is trying to attract our mind and attract our senses. Looking at nice buildings, nice cars, nice people, nice dresses, nice foods, nice technology, nice health. And then we go little in the country and there's nice rivers and there's nice oceans and nice streams and nice trees and forests and flowers. Within this world there is so much variety by which different classes of people can try to enjoy. There is nice music and there is nice poetry and there is nice theater and there are so many athletic events and sports. And there are so many arts and crafts that we can engage our minds in. So many professions, so many studies, so many books. It's innumerable forms in which people try to enjoy in this world, everywhere. But Mahaprabhu had said, Sunyayatam jagat saravam govinda virahename. That bereft of the vision of Govinda, this whole world is a dreary void. There's nothing in it. There's nothing, nowhere, anywhere, or anyone that has any pleasure. In fact, it's all miserable. Void. We must come to this consciousness that without Krishna, there's nothing. When we get some little taste of Krishna, then the perverted reflections have no appeal at all. As Sripad Jamunacharya prayed, he was a king. Jamunacharya was a great king. When he was a young boy, he was a very devoted brahmachari. And he was very learned, and he was a very, very good disciple of his spiritual master. He was willing to take any risks to protect the dignity of the name of his Gurudev to the degree of challenging the greatest scholar in all of the kingdom who was offending his Gurudev. And Jamunacharya, his grandfather and his father, Natha Muni, they were great devotees. By their association, he was given the blessings of Lord Sri Krishna. But somehow or other, although he conquered this pundit as a seva to his guru, as a result, he was given tremendous fortune because the contest was that if he defeated this great pundit of the king, he would be given half the kingdom. And he was just a little boy, and he defeated. He was just doing it out of very sincere, humble service to his Guru Maharaj. But then he was given half the kingdom. That means power, control, unbelievable facility for opulences and enjoyments. And somehow or other, he became attached to enjoying his kingdom. dharmasyahyapavargyasthanarthothayapakalpate. Bhagavatam says that when we engage in devotional service, sometimes Krishna reciprocates by giving us very good facilities to do more devotional service. But if you become attached to those facilities for your own pleasure, that is a great stumbling block in your spiritual progress. Whatever Krishna gives us, we must recognize that it is not for me. Whether I'm in a palace or living under a tree, I must be the same, that everything is for Krishna. Sometimes we see in the lives of devotees who are not so very spiritually advanced that when they begin in Krishna consciousness, they have very little, they have nothing. When this Krishna consciousness movement began, it was so poor, there was nothing. And the first devotees, there was no heat, there was hardly any food. They would just struggle and strive, but they were blissful. They were blissful sleeping on the floor together. They were blissful just eating some roti and dal. They were blissful freezing in the winter and burning in the summers. They were blissful going out all day to chant the holy names, to distribute some little magazines, and come back with a few paises in the evening and give them to their Guru Maharaj. They were blissful just to be doing devotional service, to be chanting the holy names, and they were becoming empowered by their tapasya and by their enthusiasm. And as a reciprocation for all of the hardships in which they were enduring for the pleasure of their spiritual master in Krishna, Krishna started to provide so many wonderful facilities to help them in their service. Money starts coming, then there's buildings, then there's cars, then there's offices, then there's telephones, then there's computers, and all these things. And soon what happened is devotees were no longer interested in going out to preach. They were gaining tremendous quantities of weight by eating so many nice prasad. And they wouldn't go anywhere unless they had a nice car. And they had their office and their phones. And they had their little positions and controls, and they became very, very comfortable. And there was nobody out in the streets anymore with the people. And soon, as you become comfortable and content with material facilities, your whole enthusiasm for sadhana becomes less and less and less and less. This is not always the case. But very often we have seen this happens. In Srila Prabhupada's life we saw however much he had, he never slowed down. He never sat in an office. He was always in the front lines, pushing the devotees forward. He was always preaching, writing, managing, doing everything. Whether he was sitting under a tree at Tompkins Square Park, not knowing where he would go to sleep that night, or whether he was being received with Lincoln Continentals or Rolls Royces after getting off a jet airplane, being escorted to beautiful mansion-like temples, beautiful estates with thousands of devotees and all facilities. It made no difference to him. He was the same. He was giving his life for the pleasure of others. He never became complacent. And the more he had, the more he used. The more he had, the more he reached that out as a facility to help others. This is Krishna consciousness. This is the spirit of real tapasya. Prapancha katiya budya hari shambandi vashta. Rupa Goswami says that whatever can be used in Krishna's service should be used. It should not be given up with the misconception that it is material. But at the same time, we must be very careful not to justify our own maya on the basis of this verse. Rupa Goswami says, don't reject anything as material if it can be used in Krishna's service, whether it be money or buildings or any other facilities. But don't think that just because you have it, that it's being engaged in devotional service. You actually have to use it and not enjoy it. Use it for the welfare of others. That is real renunciation. In fact, that is the highest form of renunciation. To accept whatever Krishna provides for the welfare of other living beings by using it for preaching Krishna consciousness. So it is a great trapping that we must always be cautious of. Because maya, material energy, is always trying to find some way to distract our attention away from the real goal of life. And that is unalloyed, unmotivated service to Krishna and Krishna's devotees. But Vedavyas, he has written within his Vedic scriptures so many ways and means by which people could gradually elevate themselves. Vedaishta sarve aham eva vedyo. But the goal of all the Vedas is to love Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. We must come to that point. We cannot be satisfied with any preliminary stage of realization. So Narada Muni is addressing Vyas that you have written all of these literatures which are filled with artha, kama, dhamma, and moksha. Economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, and liberation. Most of the Vedic literatures deal with how to achieve these goals in life. But the Purushartha, Siromani, the crest jewel of all the goals of life, the fifth goal, Prema Pumartha Mahan, pure love of God, it is not prominent. People are being misled. Because artha, kama, dhamma, and moksha all are related to the satisfaction of the body and the mind. Yes, even moksha, impersonal moksha. Real moksha is pure love of Krishna, shuddha bhakti. But the impersonalist conception of mukti is due to frustrations with the body and mind. We just want to enjoy the situation of being relieved of it all. It's still connected to the body and mind. Therefore, it is all Kaitava Dharma. Cheating religion. So Narada Muni is asking Vedavyas, you have propagated this artha, kama, dhamma, moksha throughout your literatures, which are all related to the body and mind. Are you satisfied with identifying with your body and mind as the objects of self-realization? What is economic development? economic development, we pray to Ganapati, or we pray to Durga Devi, or we pray to Shankar, or sometimes we pray even to Krishna, Narayan, Surya. Because we want a better condition of life, we want more money, we want better facilities for our families, for ourselves, for the poor people of the world. This means the object of your self-realization is to find satisfaction with those things connected to the body and mind. That is economic development. That is sense gratification. And religiosity, being charitable, is also trying to make the object of your self-realization the satisfaction of the body and mind of yourself and others. The feeling that I have given, that I am good, is sense gratification to the mind. Because you're giving something for the sense gratification of others' bodies. It is all material. And moksha, which is the product of utter frustration, is still selfishly oriented. So Narada is telling Vyasadeva that you have propagated all these things, but are you satisfied with it? Do unto others as you would like them to do to you. The only real satisfaction is pure devotional service. There's nothing else. Give them that. Nothing else. And this was what prompted the beautiful writing of this Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma prajita kayita vatra paramaniramat satanam satam. Srimad Bhagavatam deals with nothing but pure devotional service. Kicks out all the promises for satisfaction by identifying with the body and mind as objects of self-realization. Kicks them out. We may not be on this platform because, as Rupa Goswami explains, pure devotional service is very rare. Manushyanam sahasre shukaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvat. Out of thousands, even one endeavors, and of those who endeavor, hardly one can know Krishna in truth. It is very rare, but by the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna, who has appeared as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives, however rare it may be in the world, you can and will achieve it if you just, with sincere and humble endeavor, take to the path. It is guaranteed. Do not think because it is so rare, it is impossible for me. It is guaranteed that you achieve this realization. If you're just a little humble and a little sincere in executing those instructions which connect you to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru. Mame vaisya shi satyam te prati jani priyoshi. Raga dvesha vimuktaishtha. Krishna says that by following the regulative principles of freedom, you get my mercy. And what is the result of his mercy? That you can always think of him, become his devotee, worship him, and offer your homage to him. And then Krishna says, you will come to me without fail. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in one place says that out of thousands of men, it is so rare, it is so precious, it is so valuable. Hardly one knows me in truth. And then In the 18th chapter, he says, but if you just follow these principles, you will attain me without fail. But people, they don't want to follow these principles because they still make their body and mind the object of their self-realization. Even if the medicine works, if a person doesn't take it properly, what can you do? The medicine is there. It is guaranteed to be effective. But people are so much attached, they don't want to take the medicine. That is the problem. And even as devotees, we are so much attached to our own egoistic perceptions of reality that we're not willing to really take the medicine. We put it in our mouth, but we don't swallow it. That is the problem. It may appear, and we may even be fooling ourselves by thinking we're taking the medicine. But you can't keep it in your mouth, you have to swallow it. You have to actually aspire to be the humble servant of the Vaishnavas, the Guru, and Krishna. And you have to practice your devotional principles and your sadhana in this spirit. Otherwise, it's show bottle. Of course, show bottle is better than no bottle. But we're cheating ourselves. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, you were mentioning that in 18th chapter, Krishna says that though it is so rare, you can definitely achieve it. Krishna says you will achieve it without fail. And on this statement of Krishna, it becomes difficult to get conviction on. Maybe because of loss of faith. Because this statement cannot be experienced. What a person goes along what he experiences. So this statement of Krishna is very difficult to experience or to think about or contemplate. So there is a doubt that remains. Maybe it may be achieved or may not be achieved. We don't know what is the reality, and that's how it seems. One becomes loose on the issue. So what can be done under such situations?
Krishna says in the second chapter of Gita, Neha bhikramanastoti pratyavayo nivijyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato. That if one sincerely does take to the path of Krishna consciousness, whatever progress we make, Krishna will always keep that intact. But sometimes, due to our previous conditionings in this material world, we go astray to one extent or another from the real path. But still, Krishna will bring you back eventually, because you have made some sincere effort. And whatever you have accomplished will never be lost. So we shouldn't think that if sincere devotees, or even if ourselves, if sometimes we we are diverted by Maya, that Krishna promised that I will go back to Godhead. If I just take to this path, his promise is still intact, but it's being delayed by our own weaknesses, by our own lack of desire, perhaps, by our own conditionings. So that should not disturb our faith. Krishna says, you will come to me without fail. He doesn't specify exactly when. For Maharaj Katvanga, within one moment, he sincerely took shelter of Krishna and chanted his holy name. And he attained the perfection of Krishna consciousness in that one moment. But if we don't have such intense conviction and desire, it may take us this life, it may take us several lives. But without fail, Krishna will bring us back home, back to Godhead, if we sincerely take to this process of Krishna consciousness. So in this sense, we should not lose faith in this beautiful promise of Krishna, because we see that sometimes within our own life or in other lives, there are diversions. Diversions for devotees are really just delays. But there's so much suffering that will take place in those delays. More than the karmis, devotees will have to suffer during those delays. So it's better to not delay. Why should we cheat ourselves? And why should we cheat the world? I have often repeated the words of one of my very dear godbrothers, who was very sincerely serving Srila Prabhupada, and he became so dear to Srila Prabhupada. And then, because of past conditionings, he really went astray. And he was less than minimally, he was serving the movement, and he was just serving his own ambitions for many years. But even while he was doing that, Prabhupada said, "You're going to go back to Godhead because you sincerely chanted the holy name." Nobody could understand that. But then years after Prabhupada left this world, this devotee got terminal cancer. He was suffering terrible, terrible, excruciating pain for months. And in the light of that pain, he just fell at Prabhupada's feet with tears flowing from his eyes, begging for forgiveness, begging for mercy, and chanting the holy names of Krishna. And just before he left his body, with tears flowing from his eyes, his body racked with pain, he said, "I do not regret this pain. I do not regret that I am going to die within days. I only regret that for all these years I could have done so much to help my guru's mission, and because of my weakness, I didn't do anything. That is my only regret in life." Krishna kept his promise. But do we have to go through things like that? Krishna is merciful. He gets our devotional service if it is done sincerely. So we must have faith. Who are you going to have faith in? Nobody's faithless. Everyone has faith. The nature of the Atma to have faith. Just as it is the nature of the Atma to seek pleasure, nobody is exempt from that. It's just a question of where you're seeking pleasure. In serving Krishna or in serving your mind or senses. So where are you placing your faith? In the word of Krishna, in the word of the Acharyas, in the word of the Shastras, or in the word of your mind and senses? We should know when we have a question or a doubt about faith in Krishna, it's because we're putting too much faith in our own minds. or in the minds of others who are propagating all sorts of speculative ideas. Whether it's our mind or another person's mind, it's due to faith in our mind that we question our faith in Krishna. It's not that you're faithless. It's a question of whether you want to have faith in your supreme friend or your everlasting enemy as long as you're in this material existence. No one's faithless. Spiritually, they may be faithless. We say faithless, but no one's faithless. They just have put their faith is no other enemy but your own mind. Bandhuratmatmanastasya yenatmaivatmanachata. The mind is your worst enemy if it is uncontrolled, but it is your best friend if it is hearing the word of Krishna and following the word of Krishna. So yes, you have faith. Everyone has faith. But who? Analyze where you want to put your faith. In the selfish, exploitative mind that's dragging you through the coals of material life, birth after birth, or in the beautiful, threefold bending form of Shyam Sundar, who's playing upon his flute, calling to attract your heart to his eternal loving Leela. Where do you want to put your faith? That is the only question. In the great acharyas who have given their lives in the selfless service of God and humanity, delivering the message of God, or in the scientists, the politicians, and the propagandists who are simply trying to get as much as they can for their own personal selfish interests. Where do you want to put your faith? For an intelligent person, what choice do you have?
The impersonalist wanted to enjoy his body and mind by getting rid of his body. Can you please elaborate on this point?
It's not that they want to enjoy their body and mind. It's that they want to be relieved of the sufferings of their body and mind. That is the motivation for mukti. There's no positive motivation because there's nothing else there except exemption from all suffering. But that is still a selfish idea. Ashlisyava padratham panashtuma madarshana maramahatam gurutva. Selflessness means, Krishna, if you want to make me suffer, I'll suffer. If it makes you happy, I'm willing to go to hell for you if it makes you happy. Arjuna, he was willing to kill the people he loved most in this world if it gave pleasure to Krishna. He was willing to risk getting arrows shot in his bodies by the thousands. He was willing to risk getting his head severed from his trunk. He was willing to do anything because that's what Krishna wanted. That is love. That is selflessness. To want to achieve relief from anxiety is still selfish. I can't hear you.
Maharaj, in the devotional service also, when you know the scriptures, there is a elaborated explanations on Goloka Vrindavan and all. When you attracted to those activities, is it not a selfishness once again? We have got higher knowledge, higher intelligence, and we wanted to enjoy that. Is it not that selfishness?
At the beginning it may be. But you can't achieve it as long as there's any selfishness in your heart. By following the process in aspiration of that ideal, gradually we are purified of all our selfish ambitions. akama sarvakamo va moksha kama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param.
Whether we approach Krishna with all material desires, with no material desires, or with the desire for the real thing, Krishna consciousness, simply by remembering Krishna and by serving Krishna and by associating with his devotees in a proper spirit, gradually these desires are removed. But by hearing Bhagavatam, we want that. We may come at the beginning because we want to go back to Godhead, because this material world is a place of suffering. But if you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with a sincere heart, even though you may have desires, you'll understand, I don't want them. I just want to serve Krishna. I want to follow in the footsteps of the gopis and be willing to go to hell if it pleases Krishna. If we're hearing Bhagavatam properly, this is the goal that we will establish in the forefront of our life. And we will strive in performing our sadhana for that goal. To be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant for the pleasure of Krishna. Even in a neophyte condition, when we understand that and we want that, we perform our tapasya for that purpose. And even the desire for liberation, even the desire to go back to Godhead, is not appealing unless it is for the pleasure of Krishna.
Maharaj, in our devotional service, we see that we always go through this stage of no facility, most of us, and facility. So my question is that, when there is no facility, what is the practical measure to guard against becoming complacent? And when there is facility, what are the practical measures to guard against becoming complacent?
Practical measure is that we must maintain very strict sadhana, regardless of what our external circumstances may be. Because when we start to deviate from our sadhana, we lose our whole perception of what real Krishna consciousness is. We must chant our rounds attentively and strictly. We must hear Srimad Bhagavatam attentively and strictly. We must follow the four regulative principles very conscientiously. We must maintain a proper attitude amongst other Vaishnavas as a humble servant. Never think yourself to be Prabhu. You are Das or Dasi. But don't just say it, be it. Through your body, through your mind, through your words, you have to act like the Das, Das, Anu Das. Not the master of the master of the master, but the servant of the servant of the servant. So, if we maintain these basic principles of good sadhana, a proper service attitude, proper association in the proper spirit with Vaishnavas, then it really doesn't matter whether we have nothing or everything. We will not be complacent. Krishna will empower us with the enthusiasm for devotional service. But when we become slack in any of these principles, if we become proud due to our success, sometimes we become proud even when we fail. Human nature is so corrupt. Then we mistreat devotees. Then Krishna will take away. He will take away all real understanding of devotional service. And in due course of time, all your enthusiasm will collapse. Maybe there now, but it won't last. Guaranteed. Cannot last. And if your sadhana becomes slack, because now life is comfortable, or because I have nothing,
whatever reason, then Krishna withdraws his mercy. And then we lose our enthusiasm. So under all circumstances, our sadhana must be very clean and very enthusiastic, and our relationships with the Vaishnavas must be very proper. We must develop intimate relationships with Vaishnavas in a mood of servant. We must always be striving to find the good qualities and glorify the devotees. If you do that, you'll never lose your enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. External circumstances have no bearing on the enthusiasm of a sincere devotee. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.